Okay, morning, everybody. If you have your phone in your hand, put it somewhere else. Yes. You know, in your pocket, in your bag, give it to a friend so you're not tempted to look at it. Yes. So we are continuing on with our storytelling parable theme. And Jesus obviously told lots of parables. I'm sure you've noticed. In fact, he told so many parables that we can have an entire semester's worth of chapel series on just Jesus's parables. And I'm even going to cover six today, knock six of them out all in one go. And it's not just that he told lots of parables, he also told multiple versions of the same parables. So we're going to be in Matthew 13 today, the second half, but these same parables show up in modified various form in Mark 4 and Luke 13. So he not only told lots of them, he told them in various variations. So I think it's right to ask, why all the parables? Well, I'd like to suggest this morning that in particular, for our one of the reasons for why all the parables, and for our parables this morning, where Jesus begins a lot of his parables with, the kingdom of heaven is like. I would like to suggest and present to you this morning that parables have the ability to heal our spiritual misperceptions. They have the ability to heal our spiritual misperceptions. So, why parables? Well, we might answer, because parables were a common genre in the first century world that everyone was familiar with. And it's good to use familiar speaking, writing, communication forms to whatever audience you're engaging with so that they understand you. True. We might also observe that everyone likes a good story that illustrates the point mixed into lots of boring teaching, right? Good stories. We all like that. True. We might also make the even more astute observation that Jesus's parables teach key truths that are better understood because they are given in story form. Also true. However, we should, I think, pay attention to the fact that even the disciples were confused as to why Jesus told so many parables. I mean, a few nice stories, that's all well and good. Good illustration makes the truth clearer, that's always helpful, but goodness, why so many? All the time. So if we're asking these questions, we're in good company, or at least we share in the company with the disciples, whose company may or may not be considered good. But nevertheless, so let's ask Jesus with the disciples about why he told so many parables. So after Jesus tells them the parable of the sower and the seed and the many different soils, the disciples came to him and asked, "Why do you speak to the people in parables?" He replied, "Because the knowledge of the secrets of the kingdom of heaven has been given to you, but not to them." Weird, okay. "Whoever has will be given more, and they will have in abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them." That doesn't seem fair. "This is why I speak to them in parables. Quote, though seeing, they do not see. Though hearing, they do not hear or understand. In them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, you will be ever hearing but never understanding, you will be ever seeing but never perceiving, for this people's heart has become calloused, they hardly hear with their ears, and they have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes and hear with their ears, understand with their hearts and turn, and I would heal them." So why all the parables? Well, Jesus knows that humans in general, and God's covenant people in particular, suffer from an intense and serious problem. They have ears that do not hear or understand and eyes that do not see or perceive. Their hearts are calloused and hard. This is a metaphor for rebellion against and rejection of God. And thus, though they have ears and eyes, they misperceive everything. we have selective and distorted perceptions with our eyes and our ears. Spiritual deafness and blindness begin from a calloused heart, an orientation that has rejected relationship with Yahweh and is thus devoid of life itself. Thus, that which is actually straight and right and good appears crooked and blurry, a distortion of reality that, if it's believed to be true reality, thus distorts all of our behaviors as well. So imagine a world in which everyone walks in squiggly lines because the sidewalk perceived in their sight is of a serpentine shape. Imagine a world in which everyone shouts at everyone else because our own hardness of hearing assumes that we must shout to be heard. When we do not hear and see properly, our whole sense of reality is thrown off, and we do not know ourselves, we do not know others, and we do not know God. If all we see is wavy, blurry buildings, then we will operate as though the buildings are indeed wavy and blurred, even though they are actually straight and clear in true reality. I think our spiritual misperception can be captured by Salvador Dali's Metamorphosis of Narcissus. If you look at the painting, which vision is true? Is Narcissus kneeling in a pool of water with his head bowed? Or is that merely a distorted reflection of a giant hand holding an egg with a flower sprouting out of it? And how do you know? With no reference point outside of ourselves to stabilize us, we can't know. Our spiritual misperception is also captured. So instead, we find our own image wherever we look. Now, this painting is a bit dark. I couldn't find a lighter one. But if you can't quite tell, Narcissus is in the top, and he is looking into a pool of water and seeing his beautiful reflection. So instead, we find our own image wherever we look, using ourselves and our distorted reality as our reference point to find some semblance of stability. We gaze on refractions of our own distortions, confident that we are seeing clearly at last. Like Narcissus in Caravaggio's painting, we gaze into a pool of water and think we have found ourselves. But as Remedios Varo's Phenomeno captures for us, our spiritual misperceptions have led us to exchange what's really real for a shadow of reality instead. A shadow is less intimidating than reality for those with calloused hearts, those with distorted hearing and seeing. The really real is terribly uncomfortable, piercing, hard, solid, substantive. No, shadows are soft and comfortable and easily manipulated. The shadows must be what's good for us, we think. So we attempt to cover up the desolations, the wasteland of our true reality with wallpaper that blocks out that which has substance and realness, that pierces and blinds and shocks with the beauty of holiness, the beauty of God in his kingdom come. Spiritual deafness and blindness leave us wandering among squiggling shadows that we come to prefer to that which is really real. Amadeo Modigliani, famous for painting figures without complete eyes, would say, "When I see their souls, I will draw their eyes too." I find his paintings of vacant eyes to be a haunting portrayal of the spiritual misperception that the prophet Isaiah describes. The vacant eyes do not provide a window into the subject's soul, their real self, and consequently, they cannot rightly see or perceive the world. When Jesus quotes from Isaiah, he is affirming that the condition of many in his own day is precisely the same as that in Isaiah's day. Vacant eyes that cannot see true reality and need their soul, their heart, enlivened in order to regain true spiritual perception. So, why parables? Well, parables are diagnostic. They reveal the reality of spiritual perception or misperception. If someone says to a parable, "I don't get it," you're right, you don't. Good job. You have self-diagnosed correctly. And so the repeated refrain in Jesus's teaching around parables, "Whoever has ears to hear, let them hear." You say, "Well, that's so mean. If we have eyes and ears, but we're spiritually blind and deaf, how can we just decide that we want to hear?" All it takes is willingness. All it takes is willingness. But parables are diagnostic of the rebellion and the rejection and the pushing away from God. And so, if you think you've totally got it, oh, guess again. If you recognize that you don't get it, that's a good first step. But parables are diagnostic of spiritual perception or lack thereof. And the litmus test is that whoever has ears to hear, let them listen and obey. So let's remember back to Denise Snyder's chapel message a couple of weeks ago, where she really challenged us that it is not enough to let it hit our eardrums and rationally comprehend. We have not really heard if we don't listen and obey, if it doesn't change our life. So, why parables? You might be getting sick and tired of this question, but parables, I believe, can heal us. And I think that they heal us by way of giving us true imagination. And true imagination is the necessary antidote, I would argue, for spiritual misperception. Because spiritual misperception can be understood as false imagination, a false vision of reality. But true imagination changes both our minds and our hearts. And this is precisely why I would argue then that Jesus begins so many of his parables, "The kingdom of heaven is like," and he gives us all of these pictures and images and experiences to reimagine the world correctly, to reattach our deepest loves, our deepest desires, our deepest longings to the right thing and detach them from that which only leads to death. So the kingdom of heaven is like, what's it like? That should pique our interest. It should spark our imagination. It should spark our creativity, our curiosity. What is it like? True imagination, I would argue, is the antidote for spiritual misperception. So, again, parables to heal our spiritual misperceptions. So in Matthew 13, I tried so hard to make the formatting perfect, but alas, ProPresent does not do such a good job of that. That's okay. In these parables, if you want to turn in your Bible, we're starting in Matthew 13, I think verse 24. We have a series of "The kingdom of heaven is like." So I want you to imagine, okay? Imagine with me that you and I are part of Jesus's original disciples, right? We've spent time with Jesus. He's awesome and also really intimidating. His love and his kindness are the most pure and wonderful we have ever encountered. And he also sees into the darkness of our inner world, which is terribly scary. But we're in. We've decided we're following Jesus. We're learning about what it means to be part of this kingdom of heaven that he keeps talking about. It's compellingly beautiful. It's mysterious. It's hard to understand, but it's full of life-giving freedom, and it's confounding. We can't quite grasp it. And just when we think we've figured something out, Jesus does something or says something that doesn't make any apparent sense. But we're in, we think. But then we're not always sure. Sometimes we ask ourselves, is this really worth it? Is it really worth it? So in Matthew 13, the second half, we have six parables and I would say three imaginative realities. Six parables and three imaginative realities. So first, we have the parable of the field where weeds are sown. And we hear about this landowner whose servants sow good seed in the field, but as it's growing and during the nighttime, the enemy comes and sows weeds in the field. And as it grows, one of the master's servants comes and says, "Master, didn't you sow good seed in the field?" And he's like, "Well, of course I did, but some enemy has done this." And well, do you want us to go pull up all the weeds? No, leave them there. Because if you pull up the weeds, you're gonna pull up the wheat, the good stuff too. No, leave them there, let them grow together, but don't worry. At the harvest, we will separate the good wheat from the weeds and we'll burn the weeds and we will harvest the wheat. Okay. The kingdom of heaven is like. Now inhabit that little story. The kingdom of heaven is like. Do you get it? That's okay if you don't. The first step. He told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and planted in his field. Though it is the smallest of all seeds, yet when it grows, it is the largest of garden plants and becomes a tree so that the birds come and perch in its branches. Okay, now everybody look in the palm of your hand. We're gonna do a little show and tell. Okay, now just imagine the tiniest little black speck of a mustard seed in the palm of your hand. Okay, now you're looking at that. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed. Huh. Doesn't seem like much, does it? But, if you know anything about mustard seeds, then you have the imagination to know what will happen if you plant that mustard seed and how big it will grow. Right? He told them still another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed into about 6 pounds of flour until it worked all through the dough. Okay? Again, look at the palm of your hand. You guys know what yeast looks like? Little skin tone, like sort of tan, little tiny little granules. Really nondescript. Don't look like much. But if you're a baker and you mix that into your dough, notice how the parable just totally leaves off. Huh? It doesn't even finish the imagination for us because it trusts that we know something about yeast and flour and what happens when bread dough rises, right? It doesn't look like much. Pretty darn insignificant. Oh, but if you have the imagination, if you know what's contained in that yeast, you have the imagination to know what it's going to produce. And then you smell that bread baking and you wait for it to cool off just long enough until you can cut it and eat fresh bread. Anybody have mothers who made fresh bread? Oh, it's like the best thing ever. Oh my goodness. Jesus spoke all these things to the crowd in parables. He did not say anything to them without using a parable. So was fulfilled what was spoken through the prophet. I will open my mouth in parables. I will utter things hidden since the creation of the world. That's from Psalm 78. Then he left the crowd and went into the house. His disciples came to him and said, "Explain to us the parable of the weeds in the field." See, they didn't get it either. So if the parable leaves you hanging and you're like, "I don't get it. The kingdom of heaven is like that. I don't get it." No worries. Jesus has got you. "Explain to us the parable of the weeds in the field." He answered, "The one who sowed the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed stands for the people of the kingdom." Is that you? The weeds are the people of the evil one. And the enemy who sows them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the harvesters are angels. Okay, now we go from this world of a field, a mundane, everyday image. And now Jesus expands our imaginations. And he says, this is what it means. Lift your eyes, imagine. Let me tell you the end of the story. As the weeds are pulled up and burned in the fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send out his angels, and they will weed out of his kingdom everything that causes sin and all who do evil. Okay. Now, if you're listening to this and you have any shred of honesty, I have sin. Uh-oh. So this imagination, is this hopeful? Is it scary? Is it encouraging? Is it a warning? Yes, all of those things at the same time. They will throw them into the blazing furnace where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Ay, 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 that's terrifying. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Imagine, can you see it? Can you imagine? Imagine the sun. We can't look at the sun. We walk outside on sunny, bright Alberta days and we say, oh, where are my sunglasses? Okay, imagine. He says that the kingdom, the people of the kingdom are gonna shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Whoever has ears, let them listen and obey. And you say, well, now I didn't hear any command. What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to obey this parable? Imagination. But that sounds really kind of scary. So this kingdom that has seemingly insignificant power, that mustard seed, those granules of yeast, but then we get the weeds parable explained and we get this eschatological vision. Everything made right. But that's kind of scary, because I have sin. Oh dear. Is it worth it? And so then we get these two parables that remind us, that give us the imagination for that which is of inestimable worth. The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again. And then in his joy, he went and sold all he had and bought that field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant looking for fine pearls. When he found one of great value, he went away and sold everything he had and bought it. Now, I was imagining these parables last night as I was washing dishes, and I was thinking to myself, oh yeah, I deeply value the kingdom. I'm all good. I know that that my inclusion into the kingdom is of inestimable worth. But you know what? Then I started imagining. You find something and it's so inestimably valuable that you go and you sell everything you own in order to obtain it. And then I started thinking about all the things I own and my attachment to them. So these rings that I wear, they are both deeply special to me, gifts from other people. This necklace that I am wearing was my grandmother's. Like, I have things in my house that I am deeply connected to. They are deeply valuable to me, not because of their monetary value, but because of their significance in my life. I have a massive old cool knife from Italy that was my great grandmother's. Like, wait, I find something that's so valuable that even these things in my life that are really, really good and I find deep connection to and deeply valuable, this other thing that I have found is so much more valuable that I sell everything I have to obtain it. So now recognize this is not to critique my love of my connection, my deep connection to these things. No, no, no. The imagination works by saying, think about how valuable that is to you. And now imagine finding something that is so remarkably more valuable than those things that you would be willing to sell everything you have to obtain it. Is it worth it? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Once again, the kingdom of heaven is like a net that was let down into the lake and caught all kinds of fish. When it was full, the fishermen pulled it up on the shore, and then they sat down and collected the good fish and put them in baskets, but threw the bad away. This is how it will be at the end of the age. The angels will come and separate the wicked from the righteous and throw them into the blazing furnace where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Have you understood these things? Jesus asked. Yes, they replied. Sounds a little overconfident to me. He said to them, therefore, every teacher of the law who has become a disciple in the kingdom of heaven is like the owner of a house who brings out of his storeroom new treasures as well as old. Let's end on a confusing note, shall we? So I want to ask you, where are you lacking in kingdom imagination? Does the kingdom's power seem insignificant and you have no imagination to see beyond, to see its potential, to see what it will become? If you wait, is Jesus's kingdom and your inclusion in it more valuable to you than anything else? We sang Eternal Weight of Glory. For behold, I tell a mystery. At the trumpet sound, we'll wake, right? All that we thought was wasted will be restored, renewed. But can we see it? Do you have the imagination? The answer is no, we don't. How do we gain it? We are formed by Scripture. Do we have time to sing that one more time? Yeah? Is that okay? Okay, we're gonna sing that one more time. Eternal Weight of Glory. Whoever has ears to hear, let them listen. And obey. Let the kingdom imagination heal your spiritual misperceptions.
Silence to our song. Songs of praise for being.